Hi, I'm Gil Headley, and I'm the proud sponsor of the Anatomy and Movement Channel. Welcome. This conference is important. It's both groundbreaking and ground-building. Literally hundreds of thousands of us have gathered here to expand our experience of embodiment, and in so doing, evolve the embodied experience of our world. Embodiment is a practice that anchors us consciously into that which is common to us all, our human body. Regardless of our differences, and we have them, we all live out our lives in a body, and we're all connected by that shared experience. I've been developing integral anatomy for the past 25 years. I believe the human body is not a problem to be solved, but rather a gift to be received and explored. Integral anatomy is an approach to understanding the whole body, which emphasizes textural layers, continuities, and relationships. We notice differences not to create separation, but to appreciate that which unites us all. I'll be presenting here on the Anatomy and Movement Channel, as well as on the main stage, and I hope you'll join me to explore the heart of inner space. And for further study with me, check out my website, gilheadley.com. When you join my site, you'll automatically receive 3 free full-length courses because I'm on a mission to share what I've learned through my own deep exploration of the human form. And I'm certain that these courses will enhance and transform your own embodiment practice. I hope you enjoy the presentation.
All right. And now I can introduce you to Kyle, who is a wilderness awareness, parkour, and movement coach. And in his presentation, Moving with Joy and Fear, he will take us to a beautiful journey because he believes that most of our movements are derived from an unconscious place and that our past experiences involving trauma, social conditioning, and natural expression determine our movement patterns. So in this session, Kyle will guide us into an exploration on how to become aware of these patterns, shift our unconscious reactions and responses to move more intelligently and create more freedom. So without further ado, if you are ready, Kyle, do you?
Yeah. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Embodiment Conference. My name is Kyle. Go by Trotting Sparrow on the internet. And yeah, I just want to acknowledge that it's been an interesting morning. I woke up to our horses and our cows have somehow escaped the fences. And we used our tracking ability to find that the cow tracks went way down the highway and they turned onto another road. So I woke up and am currently dealing with that. We know where they are and now we have to get them. So thankfully my roommates are doing that so I can be here with you all. So I do have a presentation prepared, so this will hopefully guide us on our journey. So let me, I'm gonna share my screen.
Ooh, okay. So moving from joy or fear, I would just acknowledge that this is a spectrum and there's a lot of nuance in here, but I believe our perception is what influences our movement. But before we get started, we're gonna take a few minutes here to just shake and land in our bodies because I'm definitely stressed out. So I don't have any music prepared for you all, but you don't need music. You can just start moving subtly in your body and just shake and wiggle and notice what parts of you are stiff, what parts of you are tense. It's 8 a.m. here where I'm at. So I just woke up. I just ran probably like a square mile through the forest, through the terrain. I'm definitely feeling that elk stress right now. And yeah, wiggle your arm, wiggle your face. Oh, wake up, get weird, land in your body. Just another minute or so here. Shaking is something that all mammals do to relieve stress in their bodies. We would shake more if it wasn't for some of our social weirdness, right? We're gonna talk about that. Doing this in the grocery store, you're gonna get a lot of weird looks, even though it's the naturalest thing you could do. Shake. Got two dogs here shaking with me. All right. And 10, 9, 8, 7, get it all out. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And just land in your body. Take a moment to breathe. Feel the stillness, but the movement, the vibration. Ooh, notice your breath. Notice how you feel right now. Go ahead in the chat, just pop in anything that you're feeling or noticing based on the shaking. And yeah, before we get started, I just wanna just give a disclaimer. Like everything I'm gonna talk about, is based in ideas, is based on experience, is based on science, is based on anecdotal evidence. It's based on this conglomeration that I've gathered basically over my life. And one thing I want to acknowledge with science, like science is always in need of constant update. Science really, for all that it proves that we really don't know anything, right? And so I just want to acknowledge that, like, what I'm sharing right now is where I'm at currently, and it is not, I'm not going to be able to encompass all the nuance and details that this topic really does require, and that I'm willing to be wrong. I'm willing to, this, what I share now might be totally disproven in just a few years or weeks. Get out. Sorry, got dogs. I just want to acknowledge all those things, and that this, I'm going to do my best to give credit to the teachers and the mentors that have helped guided this perspective along the way. Many of them are presenting at this conference, so check them out. I just want to put that out there before we get started. And finally, one last piece is gratitude. Always start with gratitude. And I am so, so grateful that, yeah, our cows are still alive. Grateful that they're safe. I'm grateful that I have roommates that are able to attend to that situation so I can be here with you all. Go ahead and just populate the chat with any words of gratitude. And if we can do this, I want you to raise your hand. If you have one word of something you're grateful for, I want to see if we can raise your hand and maybe we can unmute that person and they can say their one word of gratitude. Is that possible? I don't know. I can't see the chat. We got grateful for the tree outside my window from Eliza. Nikita is in the park right now, and it felt like a freedom from the social option. All right. Yeah, I'm just so grateful for the morning sun. I'm grateful that I have a warm place to speak. Ah, oh, grateful for the buzz of energy from Christine. Ellie, grateful for my family listening while washing up. Natalie, grateful for the opportunity to learn here. Yeah, I imagine that we could actually spend this entire 50 minutes just naming the things that we're grateful for, and that would actually be a huge benefit. I think we would all actually get a lot out of that, and it would be nourishing and supportive, and we're going to talk about some other things. So back to my screen here. So just who am I? I'm just a guy. One of my passions is learning and exploring human potential. I had a really transformative experience in my mid-20s that showed me so much more is possible than I've ever really been given, like, the awareness or the opportunity. I grew up a pretty standard suburban lifestyle here in Wisconsin, in America. And I eventually became an IT software engineer. And that was it. My skills were really based in computers. My skills were based in electricity and the internet and phone. And I found that I wasn't really capable of too much more outside of that. I didn't have a particularly useful skill set. It was very dependent skills. And I went to the Wilderness Awareness School, a 9-month outdoor survival program. And I learned to deeply connect with nature. I learned how to live in harmony. I learned to feed myself off the land. And I went through a lot of discomfort. And I was able to overcome so many things, which really helped me realize my potential. And that catapulted me onto a journey of learning from all kinds of people. I've done, like, the cold training with Wim Hof in Poland and climbing a mountain in minus 21 degrees Celsius in just my shorts, right? I've done a lot of Sistema training. I've trained with Rafe for a number of years, climbing up waterfalls and jumping gaps between trees and running on the rocks. And I've just really come to realize that I'm so much more capable than I've really ever been given the opportunity from society. I kind of had to forge my path, and parkour in nature created the metaphor for me to really analyze my life and start to dissect and realize how I can chunk it and move forward. Okay. That's a little bit about me. I do a lot of other things. So what is natural movement? You can type in the chat. What does it mean to move naturally, right? We have this idea. There's all these programs that you can buy, right? Natural movement. We're going to move naturally. We're going to, like, what does that actually mean? Does that just mean I move in nature, right? Or how do I move in nature? There's so many different contexts. So I think natural movement is a really big buzzword, but I don't actually know what it means, right? I think a lot of us don't. But a definition I'm gonna use that I got from one of my Sistema teachers at Roots Dojo is natural movement is when you're moving from a place of joy instead of from a place of fear, right? You're moving, some people often refer to this as the flow state, right? Where things are just happening. You're just, like, in the moment, bah, 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 right? You're not thinking about any of the consequences. So this is gonna be the basis for which we kind of build this argument. So my argument is that a lot of us are moving from a place of unconscious or conscious fears, and there are really fewer moments that we're moving from the purity of joy. And I'm gonna explain why I think that is. Feel free to question me and poke holes in my argument, because through that discourse and feedback is how we arrive at a better answer. And then we'll argue about that and we'll get to a better answer. I don't think I'm eternally right in my thinking, but I think I'm on the right path. So, why does our environment, or why does a situation, right? How are the pieces situated together, impact our movement? Right? Different environments, different situations, different people. Why is it that if, let's say I'm in a padded room, like how might I be able to explore that space, right? I can run and dive and roll and run into the walls and I'm protected. Now, let's imagine that I'm in a cement room, okay? I don't have that same level of freedom per se, right? I might actually, and that's one of the things that parkour has taught me. We started with pads and we moved to thinner pads and then we eventually moved to the cement. But I would argue that you are moving differently in a padded room versus a cement room, okay? Just hold that question, why is that? Why is it that I move differently in a grocery store versus in my own house, right? At my house, I crawl around on the floor, I do weird coordination patterns, I dance, I do all these things. But I don't really do that at the grocery store. I do more and more so, but I would just, again, encourage you to ask the question of yourself, why do you move differently in a grocery store versus at your house? A couple other examples, right? The people, the context, the situation. There are certain friends when I'm around, I have this larger freedom of movement. I can tackle them, I can hug them, I can punch them, I can, you know, wrestle them. And then I have, and then if I were to do that with random strangers, I could get in a lot of trouble. And there are lots of reasons for that, but we're gonna slowly hone in on why I think we move differently, again, around close friends versus strangers. And then again, why, you know, how do you move on a first date versus you've been in that relationship for 1, 2, 10 years, right? Like on a on a first date, so like, right, you wanna make sure you're all clean and you do all these things and you have all these nice clothes and you, you know, you want to present your best self. And then over time, right, you start to relax. You start to maybe feel you can be more fully yourself because you've been accepted by this person, right? So why is this? Why does our environment, why does the situation, why are we moving differently in all of these different scenarios, right? There's a lot of reason, there's a lot of nuance. Check out all the other talks on the embodiment conference. I think we're all talking about the same thing, but I'm gonna focus on kind of the bigger theory that I have. So I believe that many of our movement patterns are dictated by unconscious or conscious fears. And we're gonna define fear in a little bit because I think it's not the word that I really want, but it's the word I'm gonna use for now, right? So I believe that we have, these are different categories of fear that I think influence our movement. So I think social fears is the number one, right? That fear of like not being accepted. Humans are a social creature, we're a social animal, we're a herd animal, right? Social media is, like that is like, we want to be accepted. Like the like button drives dopamine. Like that proves that point right there. And we're going to talk a lot more about that. But we also have physical fears of like getting hurt, breaking an arm, cutting something open, right? Somehow enabling a part of our body from working, right? I don't want to do this jump because I might, you know, not make it and I might break my leg, right? That's the classic parkour thing. I don't want to do parkour because I could get hurt, okay? And physiological fears, this is one that was interesting for me. Basically, I found out one day through experience that I am allergic to bees. And I got stung by a bee and I was way out in the woods. And it really impacted me in a way that I've never experienced before. And now when I go into the forest during the summer, because I don't have to worry about them in the winter in the cold, but I move differently when I, as soon as I step off that trail, I have the awareness that I could step on a ground bee's nest and get stung. And basically I'm like, I have to stab myself with an EpiPen. I have to go to the hospital. And like my next 3 days are like pretty much ruined. So when I move, when I take that step off trail, like I have this kind of fear, like I'm not going to get hurt, but I'm going to have a physiological reaction, right? And then there's the fear of death or dying. And that's kind of a big topic we're not going to get into. But I really believe that a lot of our movements are limited by social fears. I believe that if you have like back pain and the only thing that really cures that back pain is like just like moving your hips like this, I would argue that if you're in the grocery store, the probability of you doing that when you most need to do that is very low, right? The probability of you moving in the way that your body actually needs or wants to, depending on the social context, I think is very low. And that's a big problem. We are self-limiting our movement. Our clothing is limiting our movement, right? The fact that we have fitness clothes means the rest of our clothing is like sedentary clothing, right? This is an idea from Katie Bowman, right? If I am afraid of tearing my shirt, if I'm afraid of getting a stain on it, right, I'm going to limit the way that I move so that those things don't happen, right? And I believe that over a long period of time, that's going to have consequences that I don't think any of us are fully aware of, right? We are subtly limiting our movement on a daily basis because of certain contextual fears. And so let's define fear, right? Right. I think really fear is a spectrum, but I would love if we could find a better word that explains the same thing, because I think fear has a really negative connotation. And I think most people think that if you're afraid of something, it's bad and it's extreme. But I would argue that like fear is just the awareness of the possibility that of an undesired outcome, right? Like, I could get hurt if I did this jump, right? It's a possibility, right? And there's so many examples of that. Like, oh, if I have a stain on my shirt and I go to that job interview, like they're going to judge me, right? And some of these fears are valid. These things totally could happen, right? The possibility of an undesired outcome. I'll also add in, it's kind of the lack of awareness of what outcomes are possible, right? The fear of the unknown. I don't know what's gonna happen, right? And you might avoid something because of that. Another word I wanna put out there is anxiety. It's similar, I think it has the similar impact of fear. Like anxiety is like spending an unusual or an excessive amount of energy on a low probability undesired outcome, right? You're just like, you're spending a lot of energy thinking about something that could happen, but the probability of it happening is actually extremely low, right? But it can take up mental space in your brain. You're like, oh, like, did I turn off the oven? Or like, did I forget my keys? Like, right? And it impacts us. You're like, oh, I gotta study for my test. What am I doing? Like, I have this test this afternoon. Like, if I don't study, I'm gonna fail. And it's like, maybe you're also prepared. Maybe you're more prepared than you give yourself credit, right? So at the very low end of the spectrum, we have just low level tension, right? You might not even notice it if you're not really have a good map of your body, right? It could be like writing like a rent check, right? You're like paying rent and you're just like, you're like, that money is going to nothing, right? And it's just subtle and then it goes away, right? I don't want to spend too much time on, so we have this low level tension and then we can, right, be more stiff, like if it's cold. And then as we get into fear, we really have that fight, flight, or freeze, collapse response. And right, many of you probably know this is due to the amygdala. Is that when we get into a situation, our amygdala kicks in and it like really lowers our level of coherence. And the most fascinating test that I did, a lot of you are not gonna choose this, but if you do, it's really fascinating. I was at a Sistema workshop at Roots Dojo on Denman Island, and Manny Emmanuel had us do this test. You stand up against the wall and your partner's there and your partner punches you really hard in the stomach, right? He does it with love, he does it with care, but he punches you in the stomach and you drop to the ground and you're trying to recover. You recover, it takes you a little bit to recover from the situation. And then you stand back up against the wall when you think you're ready and your partner is like, Kyle, I am not going to hit you. I'm not going to hit you. And of course he's not, he's telling the truth. He's not going to hit me, but he does everything as if he's going to hit me and he doesn't hit me, but my body responds. I excessively flinch, right? I'm not choosing that. I know he's not gonna hit me. This is a trusted person. And he does that every 30 seconds. And at first I'm like, and then, and then it becomes just little like winces. And then it took me about just over 2 minutes, closer to 3 minutes, where he would do it and I wouldn't respond, right? I'm no longer in an amygdalated state and I have taken myself off the spectrum. But literally when he punched me in the stomach, I went to fight, flight, freeze response, and every fake punch, I was a little bit lower on the spectrum of responding to the threat, right? So if you wanna try that, get a friend that you love and trust and have them punch you, and they have to punch you hard enough that you actually get into that stimulated space, right? Depending, and this is all nuance, everybody's gonna be different, but you can get punched and not respond, right? So just think about that. It's an interesting experiment. So think about like when someone is like, hey, you know, Ben, I wanna give you some feedback, you know, about something you did yesterday, right? Already you start this response of like, what did I do? Oh my God, like, was it that one thing? Did he know that I, right? And I can be in fear and anxiety. I can, and then I'm like, yeah, like, you know, you left the door open. Not a big deal. If you could just close the door and you're like, okay, oh, thank God I didn't, right? So it can happen in situations. It doesn't have to be a punch. A lot of it is verbal, right? If I posted something on Instagram and it didn't get, 50 likes in the first 50 minutes, like, do people not like me? Or my content, is it not valuable? And then, right, maybe it goes viral the next day, right? We spend a lot of energy on things that maybe don't matter. And I don't want to minimize these fears and these anxieties, because they are real. They are real to you. They are real to me. It doesn't matter that it's a really low probability. It's still impacting me, right? If I have a fear of flying, I was looking at the stats, is like 1 in 20 million chance of dying on a plane crash, right? But that fear is still real for you, right? So I don't want to take that away, or I don't want to minimize that. So I just want to acknowledge that. And I want to acknowledge this thing I got from Rafe. Rafe Kelly is the presenter on this channel, but this idea of like risk versus danger. All right, so what do I mean by that? Danger is like the severity of the perceived consequence, right? It's like, what is actually going to happen to me and how consequential is that? Risk is the probability of that thing happening, right? So you can be like low risk, high danger, right? You can be low risk, low danger. It can be high risk, low danger, high risk, high danger, right? So what do you think on that spectrum? What is driving a car? And you can populate in the chat. What do you think driving a car is? Is that low risk, high risk? Is that low danger, high danger, medium, right? Where would you put that on the spectrum? I'm going to say it is low risk, high danger. All right. Driving a car, cars are pretty advanced. They have a lot of safety features. We're pretty good at driving a car. But if you're in a car accident, it can be really catastrophic. It can have a big impact on our life, right? But another thing we have to go into the mix is the person driving the car, right? Like you driving your Tesla or, driving your car for 10 years, might have a lower risk than if you, are this young child getting behind the wheel of a Jeep, right? So we have this idea of risk versus danger, and then it depends on who's involved. So another one we can look at is like surgery, right? Where would you all put that on the spectrum? Right, I would say, again, surgery can be a high risk and a high danger. Right. And it depends like what you're getting surgery on. Right here, I'm just getting stitches put into my leg because I missed a jump. Right. But again, did the surgeon sleep that night? Is it an invasive species surgery? Are you having parts replaced? Right. There is a lot of nuance in here, but I think we are doing these calculations on a daily basis. That's also based on our skill or our awareness in a particular area, right? Like if you're a parkour guy, girl, woman, right? You're like, watch the store roof culture. He's going to jump between buildings and they're like, this is not risky, right? For him, he's trained that jump. He has a high level of skill. He has a high level of connection, a high level of experience. If he misses that jump, he will die. There is no question about that, but it is a very low risk and he believes in himself enough that he's willing to take the jump, right? And I think we want to apply this philosophy to a lot of areas of our life, right? We need to have the confidence in ourselves, in our skill, in our ability to solve problems, right? And we need to know, right? There are things that I don't do because it's high risk and high danger. And depending on what I have coming up, like I was training for a parkour competition. So I'm like, that's high risk, that's high danger. It's not worth it to me, right? I'm gonna be like in the top of my game, or I have people coming to an event that I'm hosting, right? I'm not gonna do things that are high risk and high danger because that will affect my ability to perform at the event, okay? So parkour, right? It's a spectrum. If I were to do that roof jump, it would be a lot more risky, right? Depending on the gap size of the roof, you know? Right, so a good example in parkour is take a 2-foot jump. I'm gonna jump from here to here on flat ground, right? I do that jump 100 times. Now I raise it up 5 feet. I do that jump 100 times, 10 feet, 30 feet, 50 feet. At what point does that scale start to tip? At what point does your fear start to creep in and affect your confidence and your ability to perform the same movement? Even you've done it, you know, thousands of times at this point, but now the danger is much higher, right? It's okay. My intention here is not to scare you. It's not a bad thing. This is a thing that has kept us alive, that has kept you safe your whole life, right? It got this strategy of being able to assess your environment has gotten you to this point, right? You're like, that's dangerous. Like, oh, that's risky, right? And you've been moving in a way that's allowed you to live your life. And that's amazing. The caveat is I believe we're limiting ourselves, right? And so why is this? Why are we limiting ourselves? I think it's our culture. I think the culture is limiting us. We have been told that there are really only two contexts for which movement is acceptable: moving in gyms and moving in nature, right? Right, a gym is a safe, known place where you can perform movement, right? You can perform fitness, you can perform exercises, but even then it's limited. If you try to go rock climbing at like a yoga studio, that doesn't quite fit what that building was built for, right? So we can move in a gym, but we can only move certain ways in certain types of gyms, right? I can't punch people at the rock climbing gym in the same way that I can at the martial arts gym. I can't crawl on the floor and do flips, right, in my fitness class at 24-hour fitness. Right, if I'm doing like quadrupedal movement on the treadmill, people are gonna look at me weird, right? Because it's a cultural thing. A gym is an acceptable place for movement, but only if you do the kind of movement they want you to do that you signed up for in that gym that's advertised, right? And that's not okay. Then on the other hand, we have nature. A little bit more freedom. You can move in nature, you can do all these stuff, but there's also a lot of hazards in nature that can limit our movement. And then interestingly enough, in nature, there's also this more accepted form of movement, which tend to be like organized activities such as sports, right? If you're throwing a football, that's okay. If you're climbing a tree, people are gonna look at you. Trust me, I know. I climb a lot of trees. I get a lot of feedback. People ask me what I'm doing. No one ever asks me what I'm doing when I'm throwing a football. It's obvious to them. So in nature, as long as you're hiking, camping, on a trail, at a camp spot with a football or a slack line, you're in the relative range of acceptable movements. But again, we're in this tiny little keyhole of places we can fully just move whenever and however we want because of context. And culture has also really shaped that nature is dangerous, right? We have been told, I've been told my whole life, don't go off trail, don't touch or eat any of the plants, and do not go outside without a jacket, right? But I think that's bullshit, all of it. There's so, like, if you live in the Pacific Northwest, there are very few plants that you eat that will actually kill you. The probability of you eating something and eating enough of it, of the amount of poison to actually kill you, I believe is actually relatively low, right? And if you don't go off trail, right, you're missing all these opportunities for connection, right? I believe these all started as like really good reasons. Like, don't go off trail. We want to protect the plants. Don't eat the plants. You could die. Don't go outside with the appropriate gear. Like, you could get hurt. Like, that is all true, but you can limit the probability of any one of those things happening to create more opportunity for freedom in your life. You don't have to be limited by these beliefs. Okay. Right? Nature is dangerous, but it also literally provides everything you need to live. And humans have been living outside in nature for a really, really, really long time, right? It provides all of the water, all of the resources and medicines. This sweater came from the back of an animal, right? Nature is dangerous. And it provides everything you need to life. So we need to be able to navigate that spectrum based on our skill and our ability and our awareness to deduce the probability of risk and danger based on our own skill and ability, okay? So culture has also created this other phenomenon. We went from tool-making creatures to crutch-dependent creatures, right? We created a compass, we created a map, we created GPS, and now you can't get anywhere without those items, right? So what is a tool? Tools versus crutches. A tool allows you to do something better. I'm building a cordwood sauna in my backyard. And I'm doing it with the most basic tools. I have a chisel, and check out this sweet chisel. I have a chisel, but you know what works really well? A chainsaw. A chainsaw increases my productivity by a lot. But if I don't have gas or a sharp chain, right, I have the ability to downgrade to a chisel. I want to be able to ultimately, like, again, work the spectrum. Like, I want to be able to use a computer and a cell phone, but I want to be able to use a knife in a tree branch to accomplish a lot of skills, right? A crutch is a dependency on that tool, right? Like, a lot of us can't, like, let's say it's the middle of winter, it's 10 degrees Fahrenheit, and you need to just run 100 feet to your mailbox and back. Right? Your house is 70 degrees. A lot of people would think it's crazy to run out barefoot to grab your mail and run back. But the consequence and the risk are both really low, but yet we've been so conditioned that we have to put on shoes and a jacket and a hat and mittens to go outside for less than a minute, right? These are cultural problems that we are participating in. So what's the solution, right? I believe that to fully participate in a given situation, you have to have knowledge, skill, wisdom, and connection. I think that's the big missing ingredient is connection to ourselves and our environment, right? I believe that we need to build awareness and relationships with the possible hazards versus avoiding them. Right. And the best example in parkour is working on break falls. I practice falling. I'm really good at falling. I fall a lot. I've actually turned falling into a beautiful dance with the ground. The earth catches me in unique ways to cradle my body so that I rarely get hurt or injured when I fall. It often is a massage from the earth to my body, and I can make it look really cool because I've practiced it. On all kinds of surfaces, rocks and roots. And yeah, things have happened. I've gotten little nicks and gashes, but it's okay. I made it. And now I'm able to navigate much more situations, like running through the forest. First thing, 5 minutes after you wake up to go and try and track down two rogue cows, right? I didn't think about like putting on my socks and my shoes and all my things. I just like ran out the door and I felt confident in my ability to move off trail with frost on the ground and try to find these creatures, right? This John Verbeke talks about this participatory knowing that when you engage in this thing, it becomes, right, you know more by engaging with the thing versus just procedural knowing, which is just ideas, right? Everything that I'm offering is a procedure, but you need to enact, you need to participate in this process. So I believe that having a meaningful practice based in nature, and I don't know how to frame this, but we talk about a place-based practice, right? Like if you live in a cold place, I think it would really greatly benefit you to do some form of cold training, right? There's gonna be benefits that you aren't even, you're gonna be prepared for situations you don't even know. Right? Like this morning, I've done a lot of cold training. I've trained with Wim Hof. I jump in the lake every week. And so when it's time to go outside, when it's cold, I'm okay with it. I've done worse things. I've climbed a mountain, you know, I climbed a ski resort in the middle of January in my shorts. Right. So I believe like a place-based practice in nature, and that, you know, it can be parkour, it can be yoga, but going out and incorporating your environment and seasonally at different times of the year. If you live by a lake, I think it would benefit you to practice swimming. If you live in a place with trees, it would benefit you to climb trees. If you live in a place with rocks, it would benefit you to climb rocks, right? I think having your practice based in your environment as well as the things that give you meaning. Right, so I'm gonna try to wrap this here with how is your practice offering you feedback in areas that you might be lacking, right? And I'm gonna focus, the physical is a little bit easier to draw the connection, but I think you should be ultimately doing this with your character, right? John Verbeke and Rafe, check out their talks, this idea of an ecology of practices, right? That this practice helps with this practice and they mutually afford each other, right? And this practice helps with this practice, right? My parkour shows me all the areas where I have limited mobility, right? My precision jumps show me that I have limited dorsal flexion and I do actually need to go and do strength training. But strength training doesn't, it helps my parkour, but it doesn't, strength training doesn't really show me where I'm lacking, right? I need a physical movement expression. It could be dance. It could be yoga. It could be rock climbing, right? I'm trying to climb this rock, but I notice that I have limited grip strength. So I can go and work on my grip strength, right? And having a mindfulness practice to be able to focus your attention and your energy and having a nature connection practice so that when you go and train outside, you're aware of where the bee's nests are, of falling tree above you, of high winds, of lightning, right? You, the more connected you are to your environment, the more aware of you are of the hazards, the more aware of the hazards, your more ability to deduce the danger and the risk along with your skill set of a given situation, which ultimately gives you more freedom, right? I don't need these crutches to do the things I want to do. I don't need shoes to go outside. I am more free. And when I put on shoes, I get way better, right? And when I take off shoes, I don't get that much worse, right? And that's the idea that I want people to take away from this, is that is to engage with those things that scare you in a bite-sized pieces, right? Julie Angels talked about this yesterday. like finding your joy and meaning and starting to slowly work yourself towards that greater freedom of expression. In parkour, if you learn to fall, you're not afraid of falling, you have more jumps. And then once you do that jump, you, right, Julie Angel's breaking the jump. Now you can do similar jumps like that. Well, you can apply that to nature. You can apply that to your relationships, right? You can apply that to your life. So creating something, a practice that gives you meaning, right? Aimed at something, and then having an ecology, multiple practices that mutually afford each other, right? It's like the forest. The forest, the trees need the mycelium, and the mycelium need the trees and the soil, and they need the predatory nematodes, and they need the rain. They all need little bit doses of each other. So you don't have to spend all your time doing one thing, right? You need to find the areas that allow you to be more free in the thing that gives you meaning in life. And for me, that is just being out in nature, harvesting food and moving with freedom, catching leaves, climbing trees, right? Being useful, being able to help those around me by having a broader skill set, right? I can lift, I can climb, I can do all these things. And I'm starting to fill in those areas where I'm less useful, right? So I believe we evolved in and are adapted for living outside in deep connection with our environment. And we have much to gain from incorporating nature into our movement practice. And I have just one note that I want to share. I asked John Vervaeke, what was the solution to the meaning crisis? Like, what is this thing, you know? We need a cultural shift. And I believe that's what's happening with this embodiment conference, is we are sharing ideas to shift the culture. We need to make movement more widely acceptable. The weirder, the better, the more often we as people need to be out empowering people at whatever level. This is not, I don't have to be able to do great things. If I can move my pinky finger a little bit better and a little bit smarter tomorrow than I can today, I think that has benefits, right? I think we want to be, we need a cultural shift to make weird movement more accepted, as well as nature. If we ever hope to save this planet, we need to be connected to the things we want to save. And then John's answer to my question was, we need communities and ecologies of practices that will help people reliably cultivate wisdom to overcome perennial problems of self-deception and disconnection. And ultimately, those practices need to be aimed at agape, which is the love, the forgiving love of all things, because you could do all that stuff and still be really evil. Right, so we want to do all that aimed at a greater love and support and help of people. So I don't know how much time we have left, but that is my message I have to share with you all. And you can find my work online, post a lot of my ideas, videos, Instagram. I'm doing a 10-week online training. So if you want that, I'll put the thing in the text. All right. Are there any questions?
Awesome. Thank you so much, Kyle. I'm like buzzing with energy. That was such a wonderful session. Thank you so much for sharing your context already. So if you can leave them there so that people have the time to write them down while I give a couple of announcements before we close. So if you want to keep the conversation going, and I'm sure there's really a lot to talk about, you can join our Facebook group if you haven't done it already, or you can connect with each other in the coffee break rooms. And if you want to own this awesome session from Kyle and watch all the ones he mentioned, you can purchase the library of our conference that is going to give you access to all the talks of these days. It's going to give you access to the audio only version, so you can listen to this while you're actually outside and moving. And it's going to come with a mind map, which is going to make sense of the 1,000 videos that you're going to get. That was it from me. Unfortunately, we don't have time for questions right now, but I hope you will meet each other in the coffee break rooms. And Kyle, top tip to close that you want to leave us with, most important thing to stay embodied?
Yeah, it's two parts. So step one, go outside. Step two, remain. That's it. Thanks, everybody, for joining me. Super grateful that you all joined in. Yeah, check me out online. I posted my link in the chat for an online course that I'm offering. And yeah, thank you so much, everybody. Be weird. Move in the grocery store. Crawl around. Climb trees. We need to shift the culture. And we can do it together. Thank you.
Thank you so, so much, Kyle. Thank you so much. Thank you, everyone, for joining us in this session. Enjoy the conference, but now go out and get moving.
Find these cows, ah!